Oh, hey, didn't see you there. Welcome to Secondary Fermentation episode number 82. We're here. We're back. You got Joe here, and you got
Nick also here. 82, dude.
82. Elsie's taking care of the baby. What a nerd. But we're back. We're here. Another episode. Last episode talking about yeast. The beast from the east. The yeast.
Yeast.
And we're back again for another lovely, fun-filled episode.
Yeah. And you know what makes it more fun? When we crack a beer.
Cracking a beer. That sounds fantastic.
We've got a couple nice options. I don't know which one to go with first. I guess I can get this one closest to me.
Yes.
So, I've had this sitting in my pantry, and I totally forgot about it until recently. So, this may not be any good, but we're going to find out, and it may or may not tie into our topic today. But this is a large bomber from Bell's Brewing Company. It is the Raspberry Wild One. They have a series of aged beers called the Wild One series. I think they do a yearly drop. But this one in particular was a sour brown ale. It is of a wild yeast strain for fermentation and then aged in oak fooders for 8 months. And then they re-age it with raspberries for some additional tartness. So this would be interesting. I got this a while back and stuck it in the back of my pantry thinking I was going to age it for a while. And I aged it quite a while. So
forgot about it.
Yeah. Well, it was packaged in 2021.
All right.
February of 2021. And I definitely bought it probably a year or so after that. So in total, it's definitely been in this bottle for 3 years and a few months, but
dang,
I didn't own it that entire time. So
I wonder if it's going to be the mild one after this.
Yeah, it could be one of two things. It could be mild or it could be really funky. So let's find out.
Still had some carbonation on there. You could hear it go.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a hiss, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a sour brown ale. I'm expecting to get a little bit of a
sour brown ale. I feel like that's not usually a combination of words I hear frequently.
Oh my. Okay.
That's some good beer pouring ASMR right there. People are gonna love it.
We've got a couple tulip glasses today too. That sounded pretty good.
Yeah. Yep, we got the tulips. They are fresh out of three lips. Got to get the dad jokes in while I can. What do you mean while I can? I got the rest of my life.
Yeah, you're bound to tell dad jokes for the rest of your days.
So, first thing about this beer, the aroma hits you pretty quick. It's also very interesting looking. It's like if you made chocolate milk, but with water instead of milk.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like a I was going to say Yoo-hoo, but it's more rich brown than a Yoo-hoo.
Yeah.
But it has that kind of that murky, like watery chocolate. It's almost like if you took a caramel and made a caramel milk and then watered it down.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's terrible.
It's interesting. Comparison. It's got a little persistent color of foam around the edge of the glass.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? It looks a little bit like apple cider, I feel like.
Yeah.
That might, because if you're listening, you can't see it. That might actually get you closer to what we're seeing. But yeah, definitely surprised by that wispy little tan head that's hanging around there for something that's been in a bottle for 3 years.
I'm liking the smell of this. Those sour notes for sure.
You can get a smell even like from a distance. Like you don't have to be right under or right over the glass to
get the old drive-by sniff. It's been a while since I've done that.
Meow.
Meow. But yeah, you can tell it's going to be funky. It's going to have a little bit of a bite to it. It's probably going to be one of those ones that's, it smells like it would sear the enamel straight off your teeth.
If my dentist is listening, I'm so sorry. I don't know why.
4 out of 5 dentists would not recommend. Can you imagine you go to your appointment and your dentist is like, Nick, I was listening to your podcast. I do not advise. I
do not approve of that. I'm having a hard time putting my finger on this smell I'm getting. It's almost a bit smoky, but it's not
I think I know what you're saying. It's like out of like kind of an earthy, deep tone to it.
Yeah, maybe it's just some kind of earthy, woody smell. I mean, it was aged in oak fooders. It was actually wine fooders too. So
that might be that might play be a lot. Yeah, there's because I think that's there is kind of a woody smell to it that I think when in combination with the sour almost mm-hmm. gives a little smoky
yeah.
vibe.
And it's a little fruity. And so it's like sour, some tart fruit, mm-hmm. a little bit woody. So I think all that playing together with that funk is really doing a number on my my nose. So I'm going to take a sip.
It's a lot more mild in flavor. It's
oh, it is.
Not super aggressive like I thought it was going to be. Definitely got a little bit of that like barnyard funk. You can taste a little bit of the raspberry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely the raspberry is coming through, and it's got a persistent tartness still.
Mm-hmm.
My big question was because this is probably aged longer than it needed to be. although the bottle does say you can age it for an unlimited amount of time. I don't agree with that, but I figured it's probably not going to get any better by sticking in my pantry longer. So
yeah,
I wasn't going to put it off. I think I was expecting the sourness to kind of subside, but it's still pretty present.
Yeah.
It's really tart.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't like give you that instant like mouth drying sensation though. So
yeah,
maybe unless you're getting that, but it's not like, it doesn't feel like cuttingly sour, like painful to drink. Yeah. You know, some beers are so like acidic that they feel sharp on your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't have that extreme effect, but I mean, no. It's actually kind of drinkable. I mean, I wouldn't drink the whole 750 ml bottle.
Oh, I know. I'm hoping we can give some to Elsie, but yeah, it's a pretty thin mouthfeel, which I think is pretty standard for any kind of like sour ale that's been aged for an extended period. I feel like it starts to thin out in the bottle, but also not overly dry, not overly biting. Just leaves a nice kind of pleasant amount of tartness
mm-hmm.
when you finish that sip. But I don't know. I'm also getting almost like a bit of the kind of woody flavor as well. There's just something like, and maybe earthiness too, but it's just like something a little more robust than the like fruity tartness.
Yeah, it's not, it gives it some depth, which is nice. Kind of mellows it out a little bit.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I do kind of wish I had gotten another one. It's no longer in production, so I don't think they'll make this again unless they decide to re-release. But I'm wondering what this was like, relatively fresh.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it'd be more aggressive, but I'm curious.
Yeah, it's true. It could be even more sour if this is kind of a mellowed out version of it.
Yeah. Mellow. It's a beer. But yeah, great pick. And it does go with our theme today. But first, let's talk a little bit about some headlines that's been going on. I'm sure you're all familiar with the Lagunitas. Big old brewery. Started out craft. I guess still is craft. Started independent.
Yeah.
For a long time. One of the pioneers. Pretty good book to the owner, the founder of Lagunitas wrote a book. I can't remember what it's called. I read it several years ago, but pretty decent read on how the brewery started and everything. But some not so positive news about them is that they're closing out their Chicago tap room and shifting a lot of their brewing operations back to the original place in Petaluma.
Yeah.
Going back home.
The original founder, Tony McGee, famously had told people he was not going to sell out to Big Beer and ultimately did to Heineken. So Lagunitas is owned by its parent company, Heineken, but they, like everyone else during the pandemic, had some tribulations, and they ended up closing their Chicago tap room for a while during the pandemic. They reopened it about a year ago, and sadly are now just permanently closing that tap room, and they're going to move the Chicago operations, like Joe said, to California. So it's a pretty big, impactful shift in the Chicago beer scene, which is, you know, a pretty large beer scene in the Midwest. They are keeping the warehouse in Chicago, so They plan to still be a pretty focal point for distribution there, but the taproom itself and the brewery will be closed, which impacts about 86 people, it said, according to this CBS News article. So some of those people will be retained remotely working for Lagunitas. Some will actually move to Petaluma, and others who will be eventually parting ways with Lagunitas. They are given some retention plans to sort of help them get through this transition with the Chicago brewery closing, and then will be given severance packages, including some assistance with finding new jobs and things like that, so new placement. So overall, I mean, pretty good effort by Lagunitas to do right by those people by either giving them job opportunities with the company to stay with them and move or work remotely for those that were able to do that. I'm imagining it's probably a lot of like sales and
and I can't imagine. I mean, it's probably a pretty big ask to like move across the country to California. And you know, we were talking a little bit about it before the recording and looked up some cost of living data. And according to bestplaces.net, Petaluma is about 51% more expensive to live in than Chicago, mainly driven by housing prices, but also with childcare and food, utilities, pretty much kind of everything. It's quite a bit higher. So I'm just curious how that works out from that perspective, you know, because I doubt they're giving people a 50% raise.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing is, you know, if you're going to move there, you'd expect a comparable salary increase to afford the new cost of living you're faced with. But, you know, also it's like, you maybe just don't want to live in California.
I don't want to be a Cali bro, dude.
Although, and you would think it would be more comparable because Chicago is a big city and it's very expensive to live in Chicago. But I guess you could live in the suburbs and like commute in and
maybe that's be a little more affordable. I'm curious as to how those stats are driven, but I just, you know, I just say what bestplaces.net tells me.
Yeah.
You know, if it's .net, you got to be.
Yeah. If I see .net or .org, I'm like, this is fact.
But yeah, so some interesting news from Lagunitas.
Yeah. We're seeing kind of more and more of this with the, I feel like the craft breweries that were bought out or partially owned by big beer. It seems like there's, you know, there's a drastic shift in some of their beer offerings, their production plans, when they don't have sole right to make those decisions on their own. And so, not necessarily saying that big beer is ruining craft beer, but I mean, it definitely seems like there's a trend with that kind of rapid growth, and with, you know, the pandemic obviously threw a wrench in a lot of people's business models, but you know, we see a lot of this happening with like these large breweries that have been around for a while and clearly are still having some difficulties, financial hardships that are causing them to either cease operations or relocate or shut down some of their facilities. So I don't know, something to keep an eye on as this continues to kind of unfold for them, you know.
Yeah, and just who might be next in general. I feel like we've just seen lots of brewery closures. You know, we're talking about that as well with some of the other beer we've got here, but you know, just some surprising closures from what you think are strong performing breweries. You know, what did this? And I know there's been a lot of economic hardships and, you know, over the past few years with everything going on, but just crazy.
Yeah. Something interesting I saw on Reddit, there was a discussion about, you know, Lagunitas, but it also kind of divulged into a larger topic of, you know, what's really going on with craft beer? Is it just kind of market saturation? Is it the economy at large that's causing a lot of these breweries to have to close? You know, what are sort of all the things you can pinpoint as a cause for the rapid and frequent closures of all these big breweries or big craft breweries? But somebody pointed out, like, it may just be partially the market demand with, like, we're getting to the point now where people that are coming of age to drink beer, their dads probably were drinking craft beer and, like, they grew up around it. And so there's maybe not that same appeal to like try something
new, whereas like pioneering anymore.
Yeah. Like my generation, you know, like if my dad had beer in the fridge, it was like Budweiser, you know? Yeah. And so like craft beer, when I got into college and started drinking and was of age, and I was like, this was a new area for me. I hadn't really been exposed to it. And so I think there was some appeal in that regard to kind of get started into it versus maybe the idea that some people are growing up surrounded by craft beer. And it's like, well, I'm not really interested because I've been exposed to it and I've seen it for my life. My parents brought me to breweries growing up. And so,
yeah, I used to run around and throw rocks at breweries. And now I just really want to drink a Zima.
Yeah, so they're switching to like seltzers and who knows? I mean, it's an interesting thought. I don't know if it has a lot of meat on the bone, but it's just something I hadn't really considered was like the sort of attractiveness of craft beer as like a new area is kind of fizzling because it's becoming more prevalent every day, and it's, you know, the boom of the craft beer market over the last decade alone. I think it's just made it more of a household presence. And so maybe people growing up and getting into the age of drinking are just kind of burnt out by it because they've always seen it and they are not really enamored by the prospect of, you know, trying it. I don't know.
It reminds me of a video I saw the other day on like TikTok or Reels or something, but like, it was like how to tell millennials versus Gen Z at the gym. And it was like looking at all these people's like feet and it's like, all the millennials wear like ankle socks or no-show socks, and all the Gen Z wear like tube socks. And like all the comments were like, because our parents wore tube socks, we're going to be caught dead in them. So maybe that's the same phenomenon.
Yeah.
Is like.
Oh, I know. As soon as I got, like, I've always been like basically no-show socks.
Yeah.
But then, then the tube socks kind of became popular again.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like, I'm right in the middle of that. I feel like,
I'm conflicted.
I think I'm too old to be wearing like tube socks, like the Nike, basketball socks or whatever. But I also am like, I just like my no shows.
I'm just going to go to Payless shoe stores and get those like little fake socks things that they had for like, if you didn't have any socks on, you're trying on shoes.
No naked socks.
Oh my gosh.
I actually don't like socks at all. I feel like I need to wear them or else I'm going to get my shoes all
big
stinky.
Big sock. Big sock. You've had too much
big sock. Yeah.
That doesn't sound right. But yeah, so we alluded to the fact earlier, but our main topic of today is a new health trend, celery beer.
Yeah. If you haven't tried it, it's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's kind of like rhubarb infused, but it's celery.
Celery.
Now, we're actually talking about cellaring beer or bottle aging, if it's in a bottle, but basically aging beer, keeping it for a little while, like Nick has done, tucked that wild one back way in the pantry for consumption at a later date.
Yeah, and sometimes it's unintentional, like me.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, I definitely intended to have it at a later date, but I was thinking, oh, I'll bring this out for a bottle share or something, and I just totally forgot about it until I dug way back in the pantry, but...
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you know, sometimes you just... Set it and forget it.
Set it and forget it.
I don't know if anybody... Well, probably if they listen to this.
What is that? That's an infomercial,
that
right?
Infomercial, yeah.
Yeah.
It was about the rotisserie oven. It was like a rotisserie cooker. Set it and forget it.
Set it and forget it. We did do a topic about barrel aging, episode 45 of our podcast, if you're interested. It's from 2022, so check out episode 45 if you do. But yeah, this one's kind of just a... post beer, post brewing, post fermentation, all that. It's in the bottle now. Now we're aging it. So totally different phenomenon and process, but.
Yeah, it's like taking that finished beer
and
waiting for it to change, basically.
Yeah. You want me to change?
Can't change. It's me.
It's like you want it to mature a little bit.
Yeah.
It's
kind of like that Cheez-It commercial.
Yeah. What was it? Our cheese is mature.
Yeah, there's a guy with a clipboard, and then like the cheese would do something that was immature.
Yeah, and he'd check out.
Not ready.
I forgot about that. Cheez-It had some banger commercials.
Yeah.
So while we're doing that, we've got actually another beer that's quite fitting for the topic. This is a Joe's selection for today from the now defunct Barrel Culture, RIP.
Yeah, this is the last Barrel Culture beer.
Oh,
it's
your
that
last
I
one?
Have.
Oh. You could probably sell this for a fortune right now on Facebook Marketplace in Raleigh, Durham.
Yes, exactly. Get you a little nice little crack. Yeah, Barrel Culture, that was a sad closure. You know, speaking of brewery closures, closed in late 2022, which was, it was very surprising. You know, they were quite a popular brewery. They had a invitational that they had every year, a beer fest. They had a good, like, club kind of a thing going on.
Yeah.
Limited releases, all that stuff, and then all of a sudden, up and closed. And
It seemed very out of nowhere, too.
Mm-hmm. But
just goes to show you don't always know the behind the scenes stuff
exactly
of your favorite brewery. So, but yeah, this is a nice little 500 ml bottle. We got Banana Stacks. So this is an American wild ale. It's another sour kind of wild fermentation style beer like the last one, but it's a little bit lighter, a little bit clearer looking. So I feel like Barrel Culture, these little 500 ml bottles that they sold, they were, you know, small batch stuff, and it was a lot of sour styles, which we'll get into a little more in the bulk of the topic today about what styles are common. But, you know, this for Barrel Culture, I feel like a sour kind of wild fermentation or mixed fermentation ale, that was kind of their bread and butter yeah. for these little small batch beers.
Yeah, so this beer I bought back in 2022 is actually not long before they closed. Lauren and I went out, hit up the tap room, got some beers, got some stuff to go. We actually had, I think, one other beer on the podcast from them. So this has been aging for a couple years. It was aged before that, too, I'm pretty sure. I did not have it in the pantry. I actually had it in the fridge, which is
nice.
Not a fully recommended location based off the temperature, just because it can slow down the maturing process, because mm-hmm. you're basically slowing down all those reactions that are going on within the beer. But
yeah, conversely, mine could have been also bad just because my pantry is not temperature controlled.
I mean, it tasted good, though. That was,
yeah, it wasn't like totally spoiled or anything, mm-hmm. so...
So it may have made up time because it was, you know, bought it 2022. Here we are, 2024. And we've got it. It's nice looking in the glass. This is another one that's got a thin collar of foam around the edges. This is a white with, like, big old bubbles there.
Mm-hmm. Leaving some lace on the glass, too. It's clingy.
It's a nice golden color.
Yeah, it is. So it's a sour aged blonde ale, and it's aged on bananas with maple and yellow cake batter. So I was definitely thinking, okay, it's got to be banana, maple-y, syrupy, but the yellow cake batter threw me for a loop. But it says it's going to transport us to our favorite diner with a huge stack of flapjacks, according to Untappd. So yeah, this one I'm really excited about. It for a sour beer, you wouldn't think of all those flavor, you know,
yeah,
suggestions with banana and syrup and cake batter. I feel like that for a blonde ale, sure, but because it's now been through a wild fermentation process, you know, I just feel like it's going to be a lot more difficult to imagine those flavors. So we'll definitely see how it stacks up. But
yeah,
because I'm mostly smelling sour, kind of acidic notes on the nose
mm-hmm.
so far.
A little hint of, like, I'm getting a little fruity sweetness smell, too. Almost like that cakey kind of a vanilla hit.
Ooh, some vanilla would be nice, yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely...
I just want to keep smelling this.
It's sour up front, but, like, I'm doing a couple swirls here, going in for some deep inhales, and I'm getting some more sweetness to kind of balance out the sour. Oh, it's really...
Very subtle banana.
Oh, there's the maple.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, first sip. Yeah, a lot of maple.
Oh, wow. This is very interesting.
Yeah. And it finishes like cake.
It does. It's weird.
It's like a sweet, cakey finish. That's absolutely bizarre. Now,
absolutely bananas.
I'm kind of wishing I hadn't read the Untappd description yeah. because I'm wondering if I would have picked that out without... the old power of suggestion, but...
Well, I think it's like that whole... It's got this whole pancake... I mean, the whole thing, like, gives you suggestion. Like, the front of the bottle has, like, a big fat stack of pancakes with syrup dripping off with bananas on top.
True. Yeah, it'd be hard not to like.
Man, this is like, it's good though. Like the syrup is there. The tartness like makes it so it's not sickeningly sweet.
Yep.
It's like not too thin. Not that cakey kind of finish is very interesting.
It is, and it really, for being a yellow cake batter, sort of homage there, it actually, with the flavor of the syrup, it actually is finishing like more of a pancake flavor.
That smell.
It's coming all together. It's coming in like different waves, but when you put it all together, it's kind of like a pancake. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting as much of the banana, maybe a little bit up front, but it's just immediately washed out
subtle.
By the...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to it's hard to compete with like a strong flavor like syrup or like maple.
It kind of reminds me of like, if you ever had like, you know, well, we had over the weekend, Lauren's birthday was recent, so we met her parents over the weekend, and Lauren got bananas Foster French toast, and it's kind of giving me that same vibe, where it's like, the banana's kind of there, but it's really taken over by some of that sweetness and all that, like, syrupy, sugary stuff. This smell, though, has given me such a reminder of... gosh, what's that cereal? Waffle Crisp or something like that?
Oh, yeah, Waffle Crisp. That's a great cereal.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they made Eggo cereal to try to compete with that. Like, Kellogg's was like, we're going to make Eggo cereal. It's the same. It's not the same.
Get out of here. It's not the same.
Waffle Crisp will be supreme. you know, another good one was French Toast Crunch, which they still make.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
At first, they discontinued it. They brought it back as, like, the little square pieces that looked like Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yeah.
Did not taste the same. I think people then found out that in Canada, they were making the little bread-shaped pieces still.
Oh.
And they were, like, ordering it in waves from Canada. So then General Mills was like, oh, screw it. We're just going to make it in the U.S. too. And so they re-released it. I bought, like, three boxes as soon as I came back to the stores. And it was just like I remembered as a kid.
Man.
That, like, maple-y, sweet...
I feel like it was a golden age of cereal.
Yeah, man, we grew up in a great time.
Nostalgia.
Kids today don't know.
They ain't never had cereal like us.
Yeah.
Damn kids.
Now I'm eating like Great Grains and Raisin Bran.
And we like it like that.
Honey Bunches of Oats. Which actually, Honey Bunches of Oats is, I feel like you can't even call it like an old person cereal. It's it's so good. It's so sweet and good.
It's just so
honey and sweet.
So bunchy. But yeah.
Anyway, we're a little off topic there.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, really with cellaring, you know, we kind of said what it is, but it's aging the beer. But really, it's more than that. It's trying to make sure it's got the ideal conditions to mature properly. Because if you have it out of whack for temperature or light, so you want to keep it in a dark place, you want to keep it about 50 to 65 degrees. Mm-hmm. Keep that consistent temperature. You want to avoid spikes. Keep it out of sunlight, fluorescent light, because you don't want to skunk the beer. And really doing all these things will let these enzymatic reactions, let the residual yeast activity, let all these biologic processes keep going in the glass. And that basically changes some things. It mellows some flavors out. It makes some flavors more pronounced. Or it may just, like, change the composition of some flavors altogether. It's a pretty interesting process, and something we've talked about before because we've done some vertical tastings.
Yeah.
Some other things. And, you know, it really can make some things shine through or make some things fade away and can completely change the characteristic of the beer.
Yeah. You know, I immediately thought about the vertical tasting with the Bourbon County brand stouts. You know, when we do sort of the most recent iteration of that, you get a ton more boozy flavor, I feel like. You get a lot of that with, you know, it's not as kind of like it's the beer's hot because it still has a lot of that bourbon imparted flavor in there. So you feel like you're getting a lot of hints of the bourbon in the beer. And through a process of aging, you know, cellaring it, kind of keeping it at a nice temp, keeping it cool in a dark area, you can let the hot kind of alcohol flavor subside a little bit. And then you get all this stuff that's underneath there that's a little more subtle, or it's just, it's having a harder time peeking through because it's fighting a more strong, aggressive flavor like bourbon or yes, alcohol burn. Yeah. So, you know, I think we noticed like some of the later or the more early iterations of that, a lot more syrupy, sweet, chocolatey. Some of those malt flavors were able to kind of come alive just because they weren't bogged down by the alcohol burn and that bourbon, which, you know, to each their own, you might prefer one or the other. So it's just a fun experiment to kind of see how time changes a beer and knowing kind of where's that sweet spot, because I think we all kind of agreed like there was an upper echelon to where it wasn't quite as good 2 years down the road, but like right in the middle between, you know, the current year and like a year ago, that was kind of a nice spot because it had mellowed a bit, but it still had enough a nice balance.
Character. Yeah. And not everything was muddled and melded together.
Yeah. So it's definitely a bit of a give and take, and there's some experimenting to go on there. Vertical tasting is a good way to do that. I think it's, you know, it's a little more difficult because you have to get, you know, beer 1 year at a time. And so it takes longer, but, you know, in the end, like 3 years down the road, you could have a really fun experience and kind of have an eye-opening experience about what aging can do. So,
yeah,
you know, and of course, aging is not a, you know, not a foreign concept. We see that a lot with wine. I think the process of wine aging is quite a bit different because typically you're aging for maybe up to a decade or longer for some vintage releases. But, you know, with beer, it's kind of a shorter period, and you can actually, you could have something different within 6 months of cellaring. So
yeah,
you're not even like held to keep it for, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. You could just do it half a year and try something, and it could be completely different than the new version you had prior.
Yeah. So we talked about, you know, what it is. We've tipped into the tips for aging. We talked about temp, you know, keep consistent temps, keep them 50 to 65 degrees. Talked about light. You want to have dark area, basically keeping it away from UV light since that can cause a reaction, that skunk spear. One thing that we did not do is we did not keep track of when we started aging the beer. And, you know, there's some recommendations for some platforms out there like Excel documents or whatever, or even just reminding yourself to know what it is. So you want to keep track because, like Nick said, even at 6 months, you can see a big difference. And usually you don't have to age it for years and years and years to see a difference. But one thing we didn't talk about was the styles that you should try to age. And for all the Haze Bros out there, I'm sorry, but don't be grabbing your favorite can of Treehouse Hazy and you know, letting that baby sit for years and expecting it to be delicious.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I can only imagine. But, you know, people do think of these, you know, I think the aging process, it was kind of more initially an idea for these darker styles, especially these like barrel aged beers that are already being aged after fermentation occurs to get some additional imparted flavors. But I mean, we both of ours today are sours. Mine's a sour brown and yours is a sour, or it's a blonde ale at base, but it was soured by the wild fermentation process. Yeah. So, you know, lighter beers definitely can be used, but, you know, I think sours are a really popular one nowadays. They're kind of right up there, I think, in my mind, when I think about aging beers. You know, if you ever go to a bottle share and people bring out stuff like they've been cellaring for a while, it's probably almost a 50-50 mix of some sour styles and some of your really thick pastry stouts and barrel-aged stouts. So, but there's a really nice website from smallbatchglassware.com. They have a blog post about cellaring beer and kind of like what you should do, what you should look for, what styles are kind of most recommended for that. And so some of the ones that they recommend, which I think are pretty universally recommended, would be, you know, you've got your Belgian styles, which, again, the kind of the, I guess the framework we're looking at is like something high ABV is always a good choice, something above 7 or 8%. That does not include double IPAs. As Joe mentioned, we want to kind of avoid something overly hoppy because really with hops, like the hop character is going to mellow out pretty rapidly. So if you're aging a beer for 6 months, a year or longer, the hop character is going to drop off significantly and you're going to be left with something that's either super unbalanced or some of the, if it has a ton of hop character and those alpha acids have kind of really fallen out of favor, you're going to have something that could be like kind of papery or stale.
Yeah.
And so that's why the IPAs are not great for that. But generally a dark beer or something less hoppy, some kind of dark ale, like a Belgian beer would be great. Barley wines are really popular too. I think barley wines are, you know, generally high ABV. They're really closer to double digits most of the time. Imperial stouts, of course, we talked about those already. And then you could do any kind of sour, really. Sour ales, gooses, lambics, things with lactic acid and Brettanomyces. Those work well because those typically, the sour elements will kind of get to a place where it's mellowed out and it's like still tart, but it, like with Brettanomyces in particular, it's a slow acting but really active yeast. So over time, it'll continue to eat sugar and it'll continue to convert those sugars into alcohol, and it will continue to create sour elements. And so really look out for sours, dark beers. I think sours are kind of the exception to that high ABV rule because a lot of the sours are going to be low.
Yeah.
I know yours was like a 5.4% and mine was like 6.6%. So
I think it's pretty relatively safe to say if your beer is aggressive, but not in the hops department, that's a beer that's a decent candidate for aging because you're looking for things like boot, like high ABV. Okay. Yeah. That will mellow out over time and allow some of the other characters of the beer to shine through, or wild ales, sour ales, things that are brewed with alternative yeast strains, because a lot of those yeast strains are slow moving. They don't ferment as fast as Saccharomyces, or they just stay active for a lot longer. And some of the byproducts of their initial fermentation kind of get chewed up and transformed into some different flavors. So you can really think a lot of those things. That's why, I mean, you see a lot of sours and then a lot of high ABV stouts or super malt forward things. And usually, you know, not the classic hazy IPA that's just going to lose all of those volatile hop compounds right off the bat. And then you're left with an unbalanced stale beer.
Yeah. And conversely, like, you don't want to have a beer that's super malt forward, but doesn't have a lot of body or a lot of phenolic or estuary character that could evolve, or a high enough ABV content, because with malt proteins, those are going to kind of drop into the beer when it's aging. And so you're going to end up with something that's, I think, really flat and kind of bland. You want something that's going to have, you know, a ton of ester character, like Joe was saying, something that's really like aggressive in the flavor department and aggressive in alcohol, because that allows more opportunity for the flavors to kind of, you know, mellow out and some other ones to kind of peek through, versus something that's a little more one-dimensional and low ABV, like a wheat beer, for example, would not be super ideal for aging. It would be possible, but I think you'd have to really be kind of mindful of the time you're cellaring it, and it may not be able to age as long as some other beer styles.
Yeah.
And you may not notice a drastic change in aging it either.
No, and you can be, I mean, intentional when you're selecting a beer to age, because you got to think about, you know, changes that can happen over time. Like Nick was saying, some of those hot alcohol flavors tend to mellow out over time. But things like sugary sweetness, that's not going to change because the sugar isn't going to be, you know, broken down unless that yeast is really active and continuing to thin the beer, create more alcohol, and burn that sugar up. But usually sweet beers will just get sweeter with time because you don't have those other balancing characteristics. And then even like adjuncts like pepper beers and things like that, those tend to mellow out over time because, again, you're dealing with volatile compounds that can break down over a period of time. So think about what characteristics the beer has and think about if they lend themselves well to time. And if you want that peppery flavor to, you know, dissipate, let it chill for a while.
Yeah. And another thing, it's like, you know, we talk about yeast character being a contributor for things like phenols and esters in your beer. And, you know, a lot of these wild fermentation beers and like these sours that have a lot of wild or mixed fermentation, You know, a lot of that yeast is going to be in the bottle when it's capped and when you're aging it. And that actually plays a part more than just for flavor, because it actually is part of the construct of being able to continue to work as like a live body. So that beer has a yeast and it's active. It's eating up the sugars. It's also helping to keep oxygen levels low too. Mm-hmm. So that also contributes to an aid to help that beer be more sustainable on the shelf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's not to say all your exploding cans of fruit stouts fruited sours are gonna age well, because they may explode.
And you can do cans. I feel like we don't even talk about cans, but like, no. I kind of think of like bottle conditioning and cellaring is like it's a bottle thing, not like a can.
Yeah. And usually if a brewery makes a beer that they want to be aged, they're probably putting it in a bottle. there are some exceptions, but usually if something's canned, I feel like they're doing it for larger production, easier to ship, etc. But a lot of the beers that you think about aging are generally bottled. And speaking of bottled beers and storing them, a little snippet that we didn't even think about was a tip again from that smallbatchglassware.com blog post, talked about storing like capped beers upright, and then storing corked beers on their side. The corked beers, it's because you want to keep the cork, you know, wet so it doesn't dry out and then bring oxygen into the beer, because it doesn't become as tight of a fit at that point. And then the capped beer, you know, they said you can do it either way, but a lot of the caps now have oxygen absorbers in the little plastic liner in them. So I think it would be reasonable to keep it upright so that way that air at the top of the beer is exposed to that and it's able to actually absorb some of the oxygen over time.
Yeah, so I think, you know, if you really want to get into cellaring beers or aging and you're not really familiar with it, or it seems, you know, like there's a lot to think about, you know, the easiest way to do it, there's a recommendation from that same blog post. You know, if you know you like a beer, let's say you're a big fan of, you know, the Bourbon County Brand Stouts, go out and just get 3 bottles from this year's release, which I guess you may not be able to find 2023s at the time. Maybe you can if they're on sale somewhere, but look out for 2024 when they release this year's. Get 3 of them. Take one and just crack it open immediately and have it fresh, and just maybe make some notes somewhere on your phone or on a notepad, and just note what you liked about it, maybe what was most striking to you. Then have the other 2 for cellaring. Have one a year after the fact, and then have one 2 years after the fact. Or you could even do 6 months and 12 months, and then just note the differences between those three beers, because it's the same beer, but it's been at different intervals. And so it's as simple as that. And, you know, if you don't have a proper cellar or basement, I mean, you can put it in a cool, you know, pantry that's not being exposed to sunlight. If you have a mini fridge that you can just, you know, temperature control, set it to like 50 degrees or maybe even 55, and just throw them in there and just kind of forget about it, as long as it doesn't have a front door that has glass. If it does, make sure it's in a dark corner somewhere where there's no light exposure. But
yeah,
I mean, it's really, again, it's also kind of just a trial and error thing. It's a guessing game. You never know how the product is going to turn out from the aging process. And so don't think of it as like a right and wrong. Like, we could have had 2 terrible beers today and we wouldn't have known until we opened them. So
yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of a risk reward scenario, because just because a beer might age well does not mean it will. So don't get your hopes up too much. Be like, I've waited for this for 7 years and I'm gonna drink it, and finally it's terrible. So just remember that it's an art, not a science.
Yeah. And don't stress too much, because I think both of us would say, like, we didn't have the ideal cellaring conditions for this. Mm-hmm. We also weren't probably planning to do this. I didn't have the foresight to know.
Yeah.
2 years from now, I'm going to record this episode. But, you know, I definitely could have had mine at a much cooler temperature and somewhere where there wasn't somewhat, exposure to light. But, you know, again, I wasn't probably planning to keep it back there as long as I did.
Well, and mine was in a fridge that's opened every day. And looked, you know, so
yeah, I'm a little bit colder.
Either, and colder, yeah.
So, I mean, both those elements could have, you know, accelerated or, you know, decelerated the process of aging. But in the long run, you know, enjoy your beer like you want to enjoy it. If you don't want to age it, that's fine. Some people will just be adamant that fresh beer is the best. So
yeah, and we'll just call you ageist.
You're an ageist. You know, you just got to mature your beer sometimes. And I don't know, it's just kind of fun to try something different. I feel like some beers are kind of, like you said, breweries will intend to have beers that are aged. And so when they bottle them, it's like meant to sit somewhere for 6 months to a year, maybe longer before you enjoy them. So just practice a little bit of patience, you know?
Yeah. It's,
you might enjoy something.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that sums it up nicely. Anything else you want to add before we jump into our next segment?
You know, what I do hope is that this can on the table has not been aged, because as we know from Elsie's pick of the week, sometimes those beers are aged, but it's not intentional.
Unintentionally.
Beers that get forgotten about in the back.
We have had an aged hazy, and it's not great.
Yeah. Yeah. The beers that Elsie's picking for us generally should not be aged.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a good time to move on
to Elsie's pick of the week. Some people are going to be like, who's Elsie?
Elsie.
Let me rinse my glass and then we can crack her. All right, Nicholas, in Elsie's famous words, assume the position. Here you are, sir.
All right. Well, we've had two very sour, complex beers, so if this is not a sour, I will actually be happy.
How much heartburn can we have?
I know. Isn't that a sad thing? Is like, I'm worried about some heartburn because of all the acid from the last two beers.
Based on the aroma, I would say this is not a beer to age.
Oh, yeah. Definitely super hop forward. This one is like kind of dank, kind of grassy.
Yeah, a little floral too.
It does. It has a bit of like a, it's like walking through a flower garden a little bit.
It's like you're drinking a beer and somebody just walks up and hands you a bouquet of flowers. They just tell you that they love you. Why doesn't that ever happen to me?
Tell me you love me.
But yeah, very, a very interesting aroma. It is. It's kind of like, not perfumey, but it's like grassy, floral, hop blaster.
Mm, okay. Yeah, definitely. Just like I said, it's very vegetal. It is like grassy, vegetal.
But like, it's also like a sweet a little bit too.
Yeah, it's like a little bit of stone fruit maybe.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I gotta say, I'll be very curious as to what beer this is. Taking a look at it.
Oh, it's a lot of...
Look at that lace. Leaves a nice little lace.
Yeah, nice lace. It's a little bit lighter than I thought in hue. It's like a dull, kind of like straw gold color.
Yeah.
I was expecting more of kind of like a golden, kind of honey amber color, but...
There's some... I just really enjoy like
hazy.
This super tight foam.
Yeah.
On here, like micro bubbles that stick in like a single sheet and almost glisten on the side of the glass. Just, it's a good look for beer to me. Very hazy. Yeah, almost like completely opaque. Again, that flavor.
Yeah.
A little. It's actually sweeter, like the more I think about it, more I taste it. It's a little sweeter, but again, it's got that like strong, grassy, flower petally kind of aroma with it too.
Yeah, which makes me wonder what kind of hops were used.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm definitely going to say this is a hazy, but...
I mean, yeah, by look, it's a hazy. If I hadn't looked at it, I'd have a harder time pinning it.
I'd be a little confused. I would. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it almost is like more of a, like an American IPA. Shoot.
But there's like a touch of like that stone fruit. Like there's, it's a mix of hop character. All right, I'm going to take a peek. See what it is.
There's another time where Elsie got us with a hazy pale ale. I don't think I want to guess that, but
this is not that. Oh geez, it's not a hazy IPA either.
Is it a Is it a New Zealand IPA?
It is not. Whoops.
Is it a It's not a West Coast, is it?
Nope.
Let me have another sip.
I think the fact that it's just very heavily hopped and flavored are really what's throwing us. Because they list it. This is a brewery that you've been to. I have not. Located in Charlotte, North Carolina. Named after a tree.
Sycamore.
Yes. This is Sycamore Honeysuckle Summer Ale.
And summer ale?
On the side, they say it's a golden ale with natural flavors.
What?
Very interesting, but that's where that kind of flowery taste is. It's like funny how I'm very curious what they actually put in this because, like, the picture on the can, like, does resemble what it tastes like. Man, I think maybe it's not even hops. I'm curious what it's flavored with. Making you choke. Are you allergic to honeysuckles?
I'm dying. Oh my god, I'm allergic to honeysuckle. Gosh, how is there so much hop character for something that's not marketed as an IPA?
Yeah, and I think this is just probably a very creative beer. You know, they say on Sycamore's website, they say it's inspired by the Southeast and designed for sipping on summer Carolina nights, except it doesn't say Carolina, it says Kaolina. There, forgot the R. Kind of funny.
Kaolina.
Golden ale ties together floral and citrus characteristics from carefully selected local malts, a unique blend of classic and new school hops, and creative brewing techniques. ABV 5.3, seasonal availability, light golden blonde clear. Aroma, biscuit and toasted bread with floral, lemon, citrus, and stone fruit.
Hey, stone fruit, we got it.
Flavor is fruity and floral up front with toasted wheat bread, light honey, peach, and herbal notes. Finishes with lemon citrus.
I guess herbal, I would have still said it as like grassy or vegetal than herbal. I guess your floral comment kind of ties in, but
I don't get the lemon citrus.
No.
Unless, like, it kind of reminds me of a beer that's brewed with tea. You know, sometimes you get that.
Yeah.
But, very interesting.
I wouldn't know what honeysuckle tasted like if it punched me in the mouth.
I wouldn't know what it tasted like if I tasted it. You know, this Elsie's getting a little more wily in her stuff. At first I was like,
yeah,
another hazy IPA. What's the flavor?
We are down bad. We have not. Gotten...
She's gotten us good, but she's getting weird stuff.
Yeah. She's really, I mean, we're going to guess it's going to be a honeysuckle golden ale. Are you kidding me?
Are you freaking kidding me? But yeah, Elsie's got us again. That's what makes this fun.
Yeah.
I enjoy it, Elsie's pick of the week. Got us. What'd you learn today, Nick?
Oh, you know, I learned that with aging a beer, you can do everything right and still have a beer that doesn't taste great. And you can maybe have some hiccups along the way and have a beer that still is fine. So, like, there's ideal scenarios and conditions for aging a beer, but even if you're textbook, you may not have the desired outcome that you wanted. So just take everything with a grain of salt and just enjoy the process. And if you mess up, don't stress about it because you might still have something that's palatable.
If you mess up, don't stress up.
It's still beer at the end of the day. I mean, I don't think I've ever had an aged beer that was trash.
I mean, it's not like you're not going to drink it.
I'm still going to drink it.
I'm still going to drink it, though.
What did you learn?
I think I learned that, you know, the proper technique for aging some beer, you know, got to make sure the temp's right, the darkness, that it's stable, just chilling. One thing we didn't mention was letting it settle because, you know, you pick it up. Kind of for this Banana Stacks one, had a lot of sediment in the bottom. Especially if there's continued yeast activity, there's bound to be some proliferation of those yeast cells, and that leads to some buildup. So you want to let the beer sit for a little bit after you pull it out of its aging location, so that way you're not just drinking chunks.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't talk about it, but there's definitely some sediment on the bottom of these two beers we had today. Not LC's beer, but...
Yeah.
You know, yeah, definitely a lot of sediment, especially if you think about it, like that particulate matter over the span of several years is just kind of settling into a little cake.
Mm-hmm. So, and you pick it up and disturb it.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I'm so disturbed.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Classic. But yeah, so thanks for listening to the episode. If you thought it was great, make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Reach out to us on socials at Secondary Fermentation on Instagram. Send us an email, eastcarolinabeer@gmail.com. Facebook, East Carolina Beer and Brewing. We ain't on that Twitter X game, but Threads, same.
Oh my God, he's on X game mode.
And, you know, just reach out. Say hi.
Yeah. And if you didn't think it was great, just... seller this episode for 6 months and then try it again.
Yeah,
maybe it'll be good then.
Exactly. That's the best. But we'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you in episode 83. Cheers.
Cheers.